Hello, and thank you for tuning in. You are listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. You can listen and subscribe to the show for free on Spotify, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, Blog Talk Radio, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, and Audible. For network or show information, visit byteradio.me. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, my special guest is Linda Stewart Henley, and we'll be talking about her new book, Kate's War, which is a World War II historical novel. Linda says, I learned about my father's involvement in World War II only upon rediscovering an unpublished memoir after his death. During the war, Linda's father took a year off from medical school to volunteer as an escort with the Children's Overseas Reception Board program. His diary describes the torpedoing of the SS Lowendam and its rescue based on his first-hand experiences. Hundreds of children's lives were saved. None were lost. Once Henley learned of her dad's heroics, she set out to craft Kate's War. Linda Stewart Henley is an English-born American. She moved to the United States with her family when she was 16 and is a graduate of Newcomb College of Tulane University in New Orleans. Her career in university administration took her to many parts of the country. For more information, you can learn more about Linda by visiting her website, which is lindastewarthenleyauthor.com. And with that, I'd like to welcome Linda to the show. Good day, Linda.
Hi. Thank you for talking to me, Robert.
It's my pleasure. And this is such an interesting story, and I'm really looking forward to speaking with you about it. So before we even get into Kate's War, you were inspired to craft the story, again, through your father's unpublished diary. So can you tell us a little bit about your father? What kind of man was he? And just who the essence of who he was?
Yes, he was a doctor. He went to medical school in Glasgow, Scotland, and practiced for a little while, but like many people of his generation, everything had to stop because of the war. So he basically put his career on hold and joined the Navy. And he actually was, he took part in several rather dangerous runs. In a destroyer that went from Scotland to Murmansk, Russia. It was a route that was heavily patrolled by U-boats, so there was a lot of danger involved there. He luckily didn't get torpedoed on that ship, but it must have been quite a frightening and also a very cold experience in that Russian winter, mm-hmm. He then went ahead and became a researcher, and for that reason, he moved the family to America when I was 16 so he could pursue research at the University of North Carolina. And then he just went on and had a career in administration. He became the chairman of various departments at different universities and then went back to Scotland and ended his career at his alma mater as the chair of the department, one of the departments of medicine there. So it was an interesting career, and this part of it that I'm talking about is really only a tiny slice of his life. It just happens to be an experience that I was able to write about, how Kate's War came to be.
Yeah. And now I indicated in the introduction that, it was after his death that you learned of his unpublished memoir. So tell us about that. That must have been a kind of an exciting discovery, I would think.
Yes. I'm just sorry I didn't read the memoir before he died. He wrote it at the end of his life, and at that time he was living in Scotland and I was in America, so I didn't really see it. He wrote it in pieces, so I didn't read the whole thing until after he died, and I was sorry I never got to discuss this event with him, or actually much about his time in the war. But then, you know, many people never talked about the war, their wartime experiences, that generation. They weren't prone to discussing things like that, so maybe he wouldn't have talked much about it anyway. I don't know.
Yeah, well, you know, if he wrote about it, my thought is that there was an intention to, you know, pass that knowledge on somehow. Now, I believe that he passed on before your authoring days, correct?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
That your father passed before,
yes,
you know, knowing you as an author.
Yes, yes. He never knew that I wrote any books. Not this one, but not any. I wrote three after he died, because I stopped working and I had time to do other things. And so he never knew this. It's okay. He once told me that I could write. He told me I had a good pen. That's what he said to me years ago. And I didn't even think anything of it because I didn't really believe him. But he must have known something because I have written three books and published three books now. So it's been a good time, a good way to spend post-work time, really.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, and it's, I just find it, you know, fascinating that he would make that comment about you. It's, you know, to me, it's such a joy, in a way, to be able to recognize, for a parent, to recognize in their, you know, children a particular talent or, you know, something that may end up being a major part of their life later on. And so that you have to be very observant about that. And obviously with him writing, you know, what he did, he apparently had a good pen as well.
Yes. Well, you know, it is nice when parents can see their children do well, but, you know, now that I've got children of my own, I've really moved the emphasis to recognizing what they're doing, enjoying seeing their thriving careers, you know, in the same way that perhaps he would have seen me. But, you know, I didn't have a creative career when I was working. I was really more focused on my rather, I won't say dull, but challenging administrative jobs.
Yeah, those can be rather robotic in a way, you know, that it doesn't, you know, free one up for creativity.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So tell us about the idea of crafting KTOR. Tell us about, you know, how the idea came to you. Obviously, you wrote it as historical novel. So tell us about your process in kind of, you know, coming up with a Kate character and the whole idea of making the book an historical novel.
Okay. The challenge of this book was to write a story that would lead to the final event, which was the one that I knew about from my father. And that really is only a small part of the book. And he didn't go into it in detail. He didn't describe very much about the event. He just mentioned it, really. And I was able to look it up and find out there is a little bit online about what happened. I don't really want to talk about that because it spoils the ending for anyone that wants to read the book. But, you know, that was the challenge. I knew the ending of the book, so I had to create a story that would lead in a logical way to that ending. That was the challenge. So I decided that I wanted to write the book about a young woman who comes of age. She's 20, so maybe she's not coming of age, but in a way she is in this book. She has to stop her life because war is declared. So this book is set in the first year of World War II in England, it starts when war is declared on the September 3rd, 1939, and it ends right when the Blitz starts a year later, the London Blitz. So there was a whole year that people spent in England just preparing for the onslaught of war. They had to, they imagined that they would be invaded because Hitler said he would do that. They expected bombing, so they had to construct bomb shelters and they had to have blackouts. And then later on there was food rationing and just general anxiety, not knowing what was going to happen when. So I thought that would be an interesting thing to explore in more detail, just how an ordinary family, including Kate, managed to survive during that time, what they did, what happened. That's really, the book is about ordinary people. It's not about heroes.
Yeah. Well, you know what, I mean, I understand what you're saying about ordinary people, but it's also, you know, the reminder that, quote, ordinary people, you know, can do heroic things at times. And, you know, that's, I think that's inspirational, you know, to have that, as a reminder for folks. So it seems then the, time, you know, prior to the Blitz, that, area, that time frame, you probably had, quite a bit of material to review and possibly incorporate?
Yes, there was a lot of reading I had to do to prepare myself for this. I had to understand the feel of the times, the real concerns of people. I didn't really know a lot about it, actually, so there's lots of books, novels that are set in that era that I read, and then I read some actual history books. I had to get the history right. But, you know, this book is not about the war. It's the war, of course, is the setting. It's going on, and I mention events, important events that take place during that year. But the story is about Kate's internal war, her struggle with herself as she grows up and has to manage herself and her family and her life, really, that she has to change. She has to change priorities. And so it's just a story that, within a story almost, really, I could say.
Yeah, and I can understand. And the thing about that is that the challenges, you know, the coming of age, so to speak, the challenges that a young woman experienced then would very much be similar to experiences of women now. But again, setting would be different. But many of the challenges, I would think, would be the same.
Well, you know, I think for any young person, just growing up and establishing their own life is a challenging time. So that's already a theme that many books deal with. But, you know, if you have something added on to that, like war, it changes everything. The ups, the ante, really. And I remember my father telling me this one thing. He did say that he, after the war started, he, along with everybody else, just simply put their lives on hold. They had to devote themselves to the war and dealing with the war. That was what was going on.
Yeah. Now, I understand that part of the storyline that Kate finds herself responsible for the well-being of a young Jewish girl. So tell us about that. How did that, we're probably giving away some of it, but the idea of how did that come about? You know, the reason I'm asking is because, you know, right now in today's world, I mean, there is so much angst with people regarding, you know, the Jewish people and, you know, the kind of what's all going on in the Middle East. And so it to me, it kind of brings it home in a way that, you know, this is something that was an issue, you know, during World War II, but it's also still rearing its head, you know, in today's society. So tell us a little bit about, you know, how Kate came to being responsible for a Jewish girl's well-being.
Okay. I think what I became aware of as I was doing my research was that there was a lot of discrimination, anti-Semitism in England at the time. And I didn't really know that because, you know, I grew up in the south of England and I didn't know any Jewish people at all. There wasn't a noticeable presence. But that Jews were actually not exactly invited, but they were allowed to come from Germany during the early years of the war and before the war actually broke out in Germany. They were allowed to come as visiting aliens, they called them, to England. That meant they could come for just a certain amount of time to escape what was going on in Germany. So I didn't know that, in fact, there was outright hostility. And so I thought it was important to put that in the book. And now, of course, it's now that things have changed politically here, it seems to me that it's a relevant subject. but I guess I wanted to just have that in there because it was so terrible for the Jews trying to escape and then realize they couldn't have security where they went. And they weren't even welcome in the places that supposedly invited them to come. So that's really all I can tell you about that.
Yeah, well, no, that's good, you know, because, you know, again, you know, like we said, that, you know, it is so much a part of, you know, in the news today, you know, with anti-Semitism and, in a way, it seems that, you know, that was also a big part of the time period of World War II and, you know, had a major, there was a major impact to the war there, then, I mean, excuse me. And so, you know, I just thought that it was interesting, you know, that Kate would find herself, you know, being responsible for the well-being of a Jewish girl. Now, when it came time to bring forth the challenges of what that meant, you know, you indicate that that process of being responsible kind of changed Kate's perspective. So can you tell us a little bit about maybe what Kate's, you know, worldview was, you know, prior to that responsibility and then how that changed afterward?
All I know is that I continued to be surprised by the fact that this book, when I started writing it, in 2020. It happened before I wrote it, I started writing it before COVID, before we had two major wars going on. And I thought it was just interesting to write about World War II because there's a continuing interest in that subject. But the whole book took on more significance as world events have unfolded in ways that I never could have imagined. You know, I didn't write with any political agenda or I don't have any particular axe to grind or any, I'm not expressing any political opinions in the book. I'm just laying out things that happened. And, you know, I guess there's a similarity to all wars and there are things that come back again that you don't expect, like anti-Semitism. So, you know, the book is not really dated at this point. It's just kind of more relevant now than it was when I first started writing it. I'm not trying to overstate this. It's just fiction. It's not any great. There's nothing, no great revelations about anything here. I just wanted to tell a good story, but put it within the historical context.
Yeah, and you know, that's. I think that's a That's a wonderful framing, you know, of the story, you know, because if it ended up being, you know, politically impacted, that would, you know, it would take away from the human element, you know, which seems that that is what your intent is that, you know, how ordinary people navigate life during wartime.
That's exactly what I wanted to describe. But I wanted to make it, I think above all, I wanted to make it a good story. I wanted people to be able to relate to the characters and put themselves in the situation. Because that's the kind of thing that writing can do. It can make people see the world through someone else's eyes as though they were there themselves. You know, hopefully I achieved that. I don't know yet. This book's just come out. But, you know, that's up to the readers to tell me.
Yeah. Well, you know, and, you know, when I was asking about the change in Kate's, you know, kind of worldview after being, you know, responsible for her well-being, is that to me it seems that when people create or nurture relationships with, you know, someone who is kind of, you know, down, the subject of discrimination, that if they become, you know, more involved from a humanistic point, then that will eventually kind of make that discrimination dissipate, you know. I mean, it's a way to kind of correct in belief, you know, that someone who's different is not as good as you.
Yeah, I think, you know, that's part of the growth of the character Kate. She starts out being really pretty self-preoccupied, really, what would be the word for that, self-absorbed, like young people often are. They just want to get on with their own lives. They don't want to have to worry too much about everybody else, and they have trouble just finding their own place. And then when they start to realize, if anybody realizes, really, that there are other people in worse situations than they are, that does change their perspective, and if they have any kind of a heart at all, they're going to realize that they might be able to help someone, and that actually helps them to develop a different sense of themselves in the world. And that's really what happens with Kate. I really can't talk about all the details because, again, I just tell the story. But it's good that people reach out and help one another. Yeah, especially when their times are difficult. You know, I think, and that's probably what I'm just talking about in the book, is ordinary people can do surprising things that they don't expect when they're faced with disasters and dire consequences and all those sorts of things.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Linda, we're about halfway through the show, so I want to take just a quick 90-second break. And then when we come back, maybe we can talk a little bit about, you know, some of the hardships that were, you know, normal during that time period and hardships that Kate had to look to overcome, okay?
Yes. Well, one of the facts of the Second World War in England that maybe people don't fully understand in America is that the country, the government actually encouraged families to send their children away to keep them safe. They provided programs to get children to countryside areas that were not urban, because the feeling was that the bombing would be conducted mostly in the cities for obvious reasons. So they thought we'd send the children away to a place where they could survive. But what that meant was that parents had to make the decision to send their children as young as five to an unknown destination to stay with people that they didn't know. Just put them on a train, basically, say goodbye, and let them go away. So that was, and then there was another program to send children overseas. That's in the book, too. So Kate, in the story, has to deal with that. She's very fond of her younger brother, Ryan, who's 13, and they decide, the family decides that he should be evacuated. And it doesn't work out very well. That's the way it happened for many people. The evacuations really didn't work. They had massive evacuations right after war was declared in September, but then most of the kids were home again by Christmas, partly because nothing ever happened. There weren't any bombs yet. Everything was going on, not exactly as normal, but it wasn't dangerous. So they came home. But that's one aspect of life, wartime life in England that maybe that I try to explore a bit. Of course, there are other hardships that affected everybody, like rationing. There wasn't much food. Everybody had to have a ration book, and they were only allowed a certain amount of basic food items each week. That happened because the Germans torpedoed the supply ships. They were trying to starve the Brits into submission. And that certainly worked. I mean, it didn't work in that it wore the Brits down. They were pretty tough about that, resilient. They put up with it, but it did cause hardship. So there was that going on. Blackouts, which I understand also, even in America, there were some blackouts, but there were nothing like the ones in England where everybody had to black out their windows at night, put out, so they had to put curtains up so that there was no light at all walking around in the streets at night when there were no lights at all. Cars could be run, but they had to keep their headlights dimmed. So it was actually dangerous, and there were accidents from people just getting hurt because they couldn't see in the dark. That had nothing to do with the war. It was just the conditions people were living in. So those are the kinds of things that are all explored to some extent in this story.
Great, great. Linda, we're going to take just a quick break, and then when we come back, we'll continue talking about Kate's War, okay? Hello, this is Robert Sharp. I want to thank you for joining us and hope you are enjoying today's show. Just a reminder, we have a wealth of information and resources available on our website, www.biteradio.me. There is a calendar of upcoming shows, along with an archive link that will give you access to the more than 1,700 shows we have aired during the past 13 years. Also on the site are links to the products and services we provide, books, photography products and services, calendars and greeting cards. There is also a link to our account at Find Art America, where you can purchase items such as mugs, prints, pillows, and more. Our show is available as a free podcast on multiple platforms, such as iHeartRadio, TuneIn, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Podcasts, and Audible, with icons to each platform on our homepage. We are also available on social media platforms, such as Facebook, X, Instagram, LinkedIn, and Threads. Our website, www.biteradio.me, has much for you to explore and enjoy. I also very much appreciate you supporting our guests, and especially today's guest. And now, back to the show. Okay, everyone, thank you for staying with us again today. My special guest is Linda Stewart Henley, and we're talking about her new novel, Kate's War. Again, you can find out more about Linda and her other books by visiting her website, which is lindastewarthenleyauthor.com. Okay, with that, we're back, Linda.
Hello.
Hello. Okay, great. That's okay. No problem. So now, those hardships you were talking about are you know, pretty much what the everyday individuals were doing. Can you talk a little bit about the soldiers? You know, how did you, represent, some of the challenges soldiers faced during that time?
Did you ask about the soldiers?
Yes.
Soldiers. Okay. Young men were conscripted, and they started doing that right away of sending, and they did it in order of age. So the younger men were conscripted first, and then it went up to the age got to be to send men in their 30s to war. They would have a bit of a break if they were married, and there were some what they called reserved occupations. People who were doctors, for example, didn't have to sign up. But this really depleted the young men, and in the country, that's one reason that's actually another reason for the evacuations during the First World War. Brits, the United Kingdom, they lost almost the entire generation of young men, so they didn't want to have another generation of young people lost in the Second World War. That's one reason they wanted the younger kids to go away and be saved. So men were conscripted and went to Europe, went to Belgium and France, mostly Belgium at the beginning, and fought on the ground. But not in England, and never actually, the war never came to England except in the air, and of course a lot of battles were fought at sea. The British, the Royal Air Force was quite amazing. They were far more successful, as it turns out, at dealing with the air warfare. With the German Messerschmitts that were powerful planes, but the Brits had Spitfires that turned out to be apparently very mobile, and the pilots were very brave. And the Battle of Britain, which was fought during the first year of the war, was given as a reason why Hitler put off his plans to invade the country, just because he didn't expect to have such resistance from the Brits in the air. So that was men. They were all sent to war, and the women then had to take over a lot of their occupations. So women were then in factories making firearms and working the fields and doing volunteer work of every kind just to keep things going. So that's, they weren't soldiers, although they could join the Wrens, for example. They're called Wrens, and women that worked like alongside the people in the army, but they weren't in the battlefront. In my book, that first in Cape War, during that time, that first year, they had Dunkirk, and so that features in the book, where soldiers were stranded on the beaches in France, and then were brought by boats, any kind of boat, to British shores to save their own lives. So all those things were going on. It's pretty dramatic, wasn't it?
It is. And the just the challenges that non-soldiers and soldiers face during wartime is something that seems for every war. I mean, with the wars that we have and have had, some of the veterans experience a lot of the trauma and the just trying to reintegrate after a war that they did back then. And it just seems to be a matter of fact, as one of the, maybe unseen costs of war.
Yes.
So So what do you feel? I mean, you know, with the with returning soldiers, what do you feel that, you know, some of the challenges, you know, for those soldiers are? You know, do you cover that in Kate's War?
I'm sorry, I didn't quite understand that question. Could you repeat it?
With in Kate's War, you know, you indicated that it ends, I believe, at the Blitz, correct? Is that correct? That it takes it up to that period?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh.
So now with, you know, with those who return from war, you know, what kinds of challenges, you know, in your book, did you deal with with any returning soldiers, you know, or even better yet, you know, with your father, you know, did he express any of the challenges that he experienced after wartime?
Well, see, here's the thing. I only cover that first year of the war before the Blitz in my book. So really nobody came back from the war unless they were wounded. I don't deal with that very much. There is a soldier who was wounded and comes back from the Dunkirk. So you can see that aspect of the war. But, you know, it's just, I really didn't want to write about the whole war. I thought what was interesting was what happened that first year when people were only preparing and didn't know what to expect. That's what I wrote about. So, yeah.
Okay. So, now, with your father's diary, were there any areas that surprised you, you know, other than, you know, the fact of, you know, some of the, his work as, you know, on the children's reception board program? Was there anything that he wrote about, you know, that took you by surprise or, you know, maybe added some different perspective you had of him?
Well, you know, I read the whole memoir, which was really, I think he should have had it edited because it's a little bit confusing to read. He wanted to talk a lot about his professional life, his research. And, you know, my background isn't research. I'm not a scientist. He was a very clever scientist. I couldn't even follow what he was talking about, his professional career and various discoveries he made. And he did have some interesting research projects. He actually worked in the lab of Sir Alexander Fleming, who discovered penicillin. So he did some work on penicillin-resistant drugs and wrote a book about that, published it. But, you know, I just don't know enough about science to understand it. I just know that he had an amazing career and went all over the world and studied this and that and the other. And so I suppose I was surprised, but I didn't really understand it. What I did understand, of course, was the short story about this, you know, this experience he had in the war. That was what I was able to relate to.
Yeah. So now, what do you hope readers will, you know, take away from reading Kate's War? What is it that you hope that they learn?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think it's an uplifting story in its own way. It's not exactly hopeful because the book ends right with the Blitz. So you just know that even though the family in the story and all the other people, the characters in the story, have survived so far, nobody knew what would happen the next day. You know, it could have all died. But I don't go into that. All I talk about is the way Kate was able to, and her mother too, to some extent, they were both able to come to terms with challenges that have faced them just in their lives. And they made decisions about what to do differently in the war that in fact made them better people, gave them opportunities they didn't have that helped them to develop as human beings, really. There's kindness in the book. There's support that people offer each other. There's courage that people show when they don't expect they need it. All those things. It's sort of like how you could survive even in the worst of circumstances and manage to make your life as good as it can be. That's kind of what I'm saying, but it's not a preachy book, you know. There's no morals exactly. Yeah.
Does that answer?
Yeah. Okay.
It does very much. And you know, I honestly think, you know, the fact that it isn't a preachy kind of book, and that the messages of courage and strength and support during, you know, difficult times, you know, those messages are the kind that transcend time. You know, those are things that are so basic, you know, to our humanity that, you know, occasionally we need reminders, you know, of really what's important in
life. Yes, there's something else I didn't mention. I should have mentioned right away. You know, I have this, all my books have a common thread. The thread has to do with the importance of art in people's lives, how art can be really kind of life-altering, provide redemptive value, that kind of thing. The other two books both have to do with painting, but this one has to do with music. And music was an extremely important of life in World War II. They didn't have television or anything like that, but everyone listened to the radio, and there were singers that sang all kinds of patriotic songs that inspired not just the troops, but everyday people. You know, they just listened to the radio, and it was like, maybe it was the equivalent of Taylor Swift or something, I don't know. But there was a singer, Vera Lynn, who was revered by people in those days. She was like the false's sweetheart kind of person, you know. And Kate, as a character in the book, wanted to be a singer. She aspired to be a singer like Vera Lynn, but wasn't able to. The war stopped it, and then she had other obstacles that prevented her from singing. But she did, in fact, help the children sing. She taught singing in school, and it was an important aspect of people's lives, of just music.
Wow. You know, and, you know, the importance of art. You know, I think, you know, that we lose sight sometimes of that importance. I mean, when you know, I look at, you know, school curriculum, you know, the art, you know, in any form, you know, music or visual arts, even that it takes such a backseat to other things, and I think it, you know, diminishes one's education, and you know, it's certainly something that we should pay more attention to, I believe.
Yes, I know it does. Art programs do take a backseat to other more academically rigorous subjects, but they provide a different kind of education, you want to say, development of people's minds and all that. And I would argue strongly that we need more of that in our lives and in the schools, everywhere.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and like you were saying in the beginning of the show, you know, that you were in, you know, a position where, you know, creativity wasn't a real big part of your job, you know, but once you, you know, were able to step away from that, you know, then the creativity had a chance to express itself. And I think that's something that, you know, people who are still, you know, in their job, you know, doing their, you know, 9 to 5 and kind of repressing, you know, any kind of creative endeavor, you know, would be, you know, better served if they look into that for themselves and actually start, you know, acting and being more creative in their lives.
Yeah, I agree with that. I also agree that, I mean, I think any form of creative expression is important. Any effort anybody makes to paint something or write something or play an instrument of some kind, it doesn't have to be at a professional level to give people an enormous advantage or just to enhance their lives. But if you make an effort to do this all your life, to do creative things all your life, you do develop skills. You become better at it, and then you can enjoy it even more as you see your skills develop. But you do have to spend time, and you do have to make an effort for that to happen.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, and I mean, in creativity can be expressed in so many ways other than the what would be typical art. You know, you have someone who could do cooking or, you know, photography or, you know, just something other than something that adds perspective or something that, you know, someone can kind of step beyond what's regular, you know, and be able to. Because I think the creative approach to, you know, creating something, you know, the idea of creating something in itself, you know, strengthens a person's ability to look at different perspectives and where they might not normally.
Yeah, but you know, you talk about creativity. People think of that in terms of things like painting or playing a musical instrument or something. But actually, there are so many creative acts. Knitting, cooking, you know, gardening. All those things have the same kind of effect, I think, enhancing people's lives.
Yeah, I agree. Well, Linda, this has really been a wonderful conversation. You know, Kate Ford is, you know, one of those kinds of novels that, you know, kind of dates back to a particular time in history, but those struggles and challenges during that time are, you know, ever present in today's world. So I think that would be a great way of enlightening, you know, those of us who may not have, you know, lived during that period, but also, you know, recognize challenge and ways of overcoming that.
Thank you so much for reading the book and talking about it with me. I appreciate the opportunity to think about it in a different way.
Great. You're very welcome. So, everyone, today's show, my guest is Linda Stewart Henley, and we're talking about her new novel, historical World War II novel, Kate's War. And again, you can find out more about this book as well as Linda's other books by visiting her website, which is lindastewarthenleyauthor.com, and Henley is H-E-N-L-E-Y. So, everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Urso. And until we meet again, thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to BikeRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. To become a show follower, visit www.blogtalkradio.com/BikeRadioMe and click on the follow link. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at BikeRadioMe. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me, that's BITERADIO.ME. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.